Hello, everyone. Then Michael here. I'm going to be redoing a talk that I did on January 14th, Dragon's Dharma. And unfortunately, the recording was very poor, so they've asked if I would do it again. So it won't quite have the same fresh ad-lib quality that comes forward when I'm talking with a group of people. Let's see how we do here. So I wonder if you recognize these famous names. Smog, Humbaba, Norbert, Puff, Elliot, and Haku. Now these, of course, are all dragon names, or famous dragon names, and when we look at history, at least in the European history, there are many dragons that have names, and of course many, many more that don't. Smaug the Golden is of course from The Hobbit. Humbaba is the dragon that was slain by Gilgamesh, and I think this is the first dragon name that we have, but there may be other ones that I'm not aware of. Norbert. This comes from Harry Potter's and the Philosopher's Stone story, and this is Hagrid's baby dragon that he was taking care of that caused so much trouble in that book. Puff, of course, if you're a certain generation, like mine, Puff is the name of the magic dragon, Peter, Paul, and Mary song. Elliot is a very kind of lovable green dragon from the story of Pete's Dragon, very popular amongst kids. And finally, Haku. Haku may be one that you have heard of but can't recall. It's from the film, the famous anime, Spirited Away. And Haku is the name of the river spirit, the river dragon, that plays a major role in that beautiful animation. So one reason I thought to give a talk on dragons is because, well, first of all, they're cool, and that this is the year of the dragon, according to the Chinese zodiac. I think it's actually the wooden dragon. They also have elements that are connected with their zodiac symbols. So at any rate, the Chinese zodiac is based on cycles of the moon. So in the Chinese calendar, the lunar calendar, Chinese New Year's usually falls about 21 to 51 days behind the Gregorian calendar, the calendar that we use today. And the date of the Chinese New Year changes every year, of course, because the moon is not balanced according to the Gregorian calendar. But it always falls between January 1st and February 20th. And the Chinese New Year is always on a new moon day, usually the second after the winter solstice. So this year, it's February 10th, which is actually today, the day I'm recording this. In Japan, however, the Chinese calendar is no longer followed, and January 1st is recognized as the beginning of the dragon year. So in Japan, on January 1st, New Year's greeting cards and knickknacks with dragon motifs appear everywhere. And fortune tellers will predict the year based on dragonish qualities. And according to the Chinese zodiac, the dragonish qualities are power, ambition, passion, creativity, those kind of things. But another reason to talk about dragons is the role and meaning they play in East Asian Buddhism, and particularly in our own tradition of Zen. What do dragons, the symbol of dragons, the quality of dragons, have for us today? Dragons have been with humanity almost from our very beginning. There are records that speak of dragons from the time of Mesopotamia and Babylon in the Middle East, In the West, there are hundreds and hundreds of dragons mentioned in all kinds of literature, starting, of course, with the great epic of Gilgamesh, which was around 2000 BCE. And, of course, hundreds of many dragons today, some of them which we already named. I haven't done an extensive look at the many dragon lists that are online, but it seems most of the dragons in the literature of the past were malevolent and lived in lairs or caves. In fairy tales, dragons often imprisoned a princess or maiden and at some point were slain by a knight or other heroic rescuer. And one of the most iconic, at least for today, malevolent dragons, of course, is Smaug from J.R.R. Tolkien's The Hobbit. In that tale, Smaug rests on a mountain of stolen gold and gems and demolished towns with his fiery breath. Living in isolation, Smaug is the very personification of greed and self-centeredness, sharing nothing of his great hoard with others. He talks and can reason, but there really is nothing sympathetic about Smaug. Medieval literature describes the dragon as a lizard-like monster with wings, huge claws, of course very dangerous, full of cruelty, and at times considered to be an agent of the devil. You probably have heard of the phrase, "Here be dragons," not to be confused with the movie by the director Roland Joff. That movie was "There be dragons." "Here be dragons" means dangerous or unexplored territories. Often it was written on the early maps in Latin. And there was also the custom of putting illustrations of dragons on uncharted areas of maps where potential dangers were thought to exist. However, recently, the image of dragons in the West has changed to include cute and good-hearted dragons, many appearing in anime and fantasy books and children's stories, like Haku, as I mentioned, Spirit Away, or Shenron from Dragon Ball, or Fire Drake of Dragon Rider, kind of contemporary video games. The East Asian dragon is really a different beast entirely. In fact, they should probably have different names. Although, even in East Asia, there are different kinds of dragons. In general, the dragons of Chinese mythology have a body of a snake, a horse-shaped head, the mane of a lion, antlers or horns, four legs with long talons at the end of each. They do not have wings, but they are able to fly, and some spend much time cavorting in the clouds. Chinese dragons do not typically breathe fire. I can only find reference to a few that are sent from the heavens to punish. They have that ability, but most dragons don't. Chinese dragons are reclusive and identified as water spirits since they reside at the bottom of lakes, rivers, oceans, or else in the very cloudy skies. And although most do not breathe fire, they do have amazing and sweeping powers. Primarily, they control the weather, summoning rain and wind. And in earlier times, they were worshipped by farmers for that ability to bring rain. And they were also seen as the cause of severe flooding or heavy winds, and in those times needed to be placated with food and incense offerings. In fact, the word for tornado in Chinese and Japanese, in Japanese it's tatsumaki, means dragon twisting. A delightful image, I think, really illustrates what a tornado is. And as in the West, dragons have been part of East Asian culture for over 4,000 years. But unlike the West, for much of that time, dragons have been considered very auspicious and lucky. I suppose that's the main reason they are the only mythological beast in the Chinese zodiac. Chinese dragons also symbolize part of the harmonious forces of yin and yang, which play a large part in Chinese philosophy and religious traditions. They are classified as yang, kind of masculine, and considered bright and solar, so connected with the sun. In contrast with that, the phoenix is yin, another mythological beast, which is dark, feminine, and lunar. But these two often appear together in auspicious occasions like weddings. In China, the dragon was an emblem of celestial imperial power. Only the emperor could wear the dragon robe, which was decorated with dragon images to denote the superiority of its wearer and his dragon-like aspirations. And the throne of the emperor was also known as the dragon throne, which to my ears sounds a lot more poetic than the iron throne of Game of Thrones. And so the dragon is so intimately connected with Chinese culture that the Chinese often refer to themselves as descendants of the dragon. My Chinese is pretty rusty these days, but I think it's long dead Chuanren. And just for your information, in case you were born in the year of the dragon, those people who are dragons, according to the Chinese zodiac, develop wisdom, charisma, and are natural leaders. But don't get too excited, because people who are born in the dragon year are also short-tempered and cannot take criticism very well. Okay. Dragons appear frequently in Buddhist literature, and almost always as beings of great virtue. Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion, or Kannon in Japanese, is frequently depicted in carvings and paintings as riding a dragon. So dragon is one of her vehicles. Avalokiteshvara, of course, represents compassion. And the dragon represents the powerful activities that relieve suffering in this world of samsara. So symbolizing awakening and spiritual development, dragons decorate roofs and gates of temples, both as guardians and as symbols of the dragon's deep insight. They are often depicted holding a special jewel known as the Mani jewel, which represents the Buddha's teaching and wisdom. So with that background, let's consider what dragons mean for this tradition, for the Zen tradition. At the Sesshin, or residential retreats, one of the chants that we recite is a short essay that Dogen wrote called the Fukan Zazengi, the universal recommendation of Zazen. Towards the end of this essay, or fascicle, is this sentence: "Please, honored followers of Zen, long accustomed to groping for the elephant, do not be suspicious of the true dragon. Devote your energies to a way that directly indicates the absolute." Dogen is referring here to an old Chinese story about a person who loved dragon images. So there was a man, Lord Yi, who was very fond of dragon images. And I don't know when he lived, perhaps back in the Sui or Tang dynasties, somewhere in the 600s to maybe about the 900s. And that's when there were many Taoist temples were built to honor the dragon king. Apparently, Lord Yi commissioned many paintings and carvings of dragons. Each room of his mansion overflowed with dragon images. It is even said he gave his sons names that had the Chinese character for dragon in them, which was not unusual. Boys' names often were included the character for dragon in them. For example, Bruce Lee's Chinese name is Xiaolong, which means little dragon. That'd be kind of cool to be called Little Dragon. So Lord Yi's garden as well, and at the front gate were also adorned with all kinds of dragon images. Word of Lord Yi's devotion to dragons reached a real dragon, and she was so impressed and delighted that she decided she would honor Lord Yi with a visit, for surely a person who loved dragon images so much would deeply appreciate seeing a real dragon. One day, she descended from the sky with typical dragon drama, dark clouds rolling across the sky, lightning and thunder accompanying her, heavy rains falling nearby. And arriving at Lord Li's mansion, she stuck her head into his study and gazed at Lord Yi sitting at his desk. Well, Lord Yi let out a shriek, fell backwards, and scrabbled out of the room as fast as he could. Dogen tells us not to be suspicious of the true dragon. But what is the true dragon? Suzuki Roshi, the Japanese teacher who first brought this form of Zen practice from Japan to North America back in the 60s, said this about the story of Lord Yi. The instant you think this is the true dragon, that is a mistake. Suzuki Roshi continues a little bit later in that same talk. Each of us practices Zazen in their own way, with their own understanding. And if they continue that kind of practice, thinking this is right practice, so even though they are sitting there in the Zendo, they are involved in their own practice. In other words, they are carving their own dragon, which is not real. That is what most people are doing. We should know that there is a true dragon, which has no form or color, which is called nothingness or emptiness, and which includes koan practice and so-called shikantaza and various hinayana ways of practice, or even pre-Buddhist practice. It is not so easy to talk about what real practice is. Dogen's practice is something beyond formal practice or spiritual practice, or even beyond enlightenment. The more you try to figure it out, the more you feel distance from your practice and from his practice. Unless you are able to have freedom from yourself, you will never have freedom from anything. Or, if you have freedom from yourself, you will have freedom from everything. This is how we attain this freedom. It is our practice. So it's a bit of a long quote. But I think in this quote, Suzuki Roshi highlights two really important points for us. First is not to get stuck in any experience or way of practice, thinking, oh, there, that's it, I've got it, this is the true practice. And rather than try to figure out the true dragon, direct your practice towards freedom from yourself. Am I letting go of my ideas, my views of what practice is, about what awakening is? Am I stepping back from my criticisms, evaluations about myself? As Suzuki Roshi says, it is not easy to talk about what real practice is. In all his writing, Dogen did not give detailed instructions about meditation practice because he felt we each, through the guidance of a teacher, must find our own way to the Zazen that is beyond technique and beyond the carving of our own dragon. Now, hearing this, you might think, oh, okay, right, carve dragon bad, real dragon good. And I'm going to set my motivation to the real dragon. But please wait a moment. In another essay or fascicle called, titled Needle of seated meditation, zazen. Dogen writes, rather than love the carved dragon, we should go on to love the real dragon. Well, okay. So this sentence seems to reinforce the carved dragon bad, real dragon good. And again, we may think, oh, okay, time to focus on the real dragon. But in the very next sentence, Dogen writes, we should learn that both the carved and the real dragons have the ability to produce clouds and rain. So what is Dogen suggesting to us here? Well, I think he's telling us practice and awakening or realization are not two. Our posture, what we do with the body and mind on the cushion, maybe is our carved dragon, right? Sitting upright, following the breath, letting go of thoughts. We are carving our dragon, the dragon of emptiness, the dragon of the interconnectedness of all things. And yet we need to go on. We need to go on to love the real dragon, the vast boundlessness and interconnectedness of our Buddha nature that is without form. As Dogen writes, we should learn that both the carved and the real dragon have the ability to produce clouds and rain. Maybe at times in your zazen you feel bored, tired, distracted, or hopeless, and you might think, ah, so far from the true dragon. But Dogen tells us the bored, tired, distracted, hopeless, or even excited carved dragon has the power of making clouds and rain. Practice and realization are not two. Awareness of feeling bored, awareness of being tired, of distracted, awareness of hopelessness, or awareness of excitement is really the intimacy with our life as it is. And although we may wish for a different state, our vast boundedness and interconnectedness with all things is present even at that moment. Dogen refers to dragons again in the Fukan Zazenge as he talks about the zazen practice. He writes, it is simply the Dharma gate of enjoyment and ease. It is the practice realization of complete enlightenment. Realize the fundamental point free from the binding of nets and baskets. Once its heart is grasped, you are like a dragon gaining the water, like a tiger taking to the mountains. For you must know that just there, in zazen, the right Dharma is manifesting itself, and that from the first, dullness and distraction are struck aside. So according to the East Asian dragon lore, the dragon is free in the water, like a fish. Water is the natural element, home for the dragon. Water is her refuge. And in Asian lore, the same is true about being in the mountains for the tiger. No harm comes to the tiger in the mountains. When we find our place in zazen, we find our natural element. We find refuge. So here's a koan for you. Become the dragon. Become the dragon. Coming to the Zendo, doing zazen at home, attending weekend retreats, longer residential retreats are all emotionally and physically challenging, right? Knees, back, shoulders, general busyness, all kinds of complaints kind of rise at some point. But please don't despair. Zokitsu Norman Fisher, Mountain Rain's founding teacher, writes this. Sometimes I say to people that in zazen, we are making a new body within the physical body, and that is why the physical body is sometimes having aches and pains. I wonder what it's like for a butterfly to poke its way out of a chrysalis. It may have aches and pains. It may be painful to get out of that constricted situation and open up. That's what's going on when you're suffering a lot in your body and mind in Zazen. But when you find that body, which is not the same as, but not different from, your physical body, when you find that body in Zazen, you feel like a dragon. Zazen, this practice, is not an easy and quick fix for your life. To become a true dragon, Dogen tells us we have no designs on becoming a Buddha. And this is quite challenging for us, right? Don't we all ask at some time, what am I doing here? What do I think is the point? What am I trying to achieve? Who am I trying to become? Dogen asks us not to become entangled in those questions, but let Zazen just be Zazen. Becoming the dragon is to meet each moment of your life as it is and fully engage with it. To meet this moment fully is to produce wind and rain. In some way, bring ease into this troubled world. In this year of the dragon, let us bring forth the true dragon of our Buddha nature. Well, thank you all for listening. I hope you find something of benefit in this talk.